Today is Tuesday, the 21st of April, and you are listening to the World Socialist website. The quote, global progressive mobilization, a bankrupt spectacle in Barcelona. Joseph Kissior, April the 20th, 2026. On April the 17th and 18th, some 6,000 politicians, party functionaries, trade union bureaucrats, and assorted hangers-on gathered in Barcelona for what was billed as the inaugural Global Progressive Mobilization, the GPM. The summit was convened by Spanish Prime Minister Pedro Sanchez and Brazilian President Luiz Inácio Lula da Silva under the banner of, quote, defense of democracy. The entire affair was a spectacle of political fraud. It was not a gathering of opponents of austerity, repression and war, but of their administrators. It was not a mobilization against the far right, but a convention of the very parties and state functionaries whose policies have created the conditions for its advance. It was not a defense of democracy, but an exercise in political branding by representatives of governments that defend oligarchic wealth, fortify the repressive powers of the state, and support imperialist violence all over the world. A very low bar has been set for what now passes as, quote, progressivism. The term has been emptied of all serious content. It now embraces virtually every politician to the left of Attila the Trump. To qualify as a, quote, progressive today, one need do little more than impose socially regressive policies with a humane tone of voice, shed a symbolic tear for the poor while attacking wages and social programs, offer ritual sympathy for migrants while fortifying borders against them, and emit a sigh of regret over imperialist slaughter while funding, arming and defending it. In an earlier period, however limited and bourgeois in character, progressivism implied social reform, democratic rights, hostility to entrenched privilege, and in some measure opposition to the more predatory forms of capitalist exploitation. Today it signifies the effort to place a morally presentable face on austerity, repression and war. The roster of speakers made clear what this gathering actually was. Sanchez, current president of the Moribund Socialist International, heads a government that is increasing military spending to record levels, attacking migrants and imposing austerity. His coalition with Sumar performs a function assigned to pseudo-left formations everywhere to apply cosmetic blush to measures drafted by the banks, the military and the state. Sanchez was joined by Lula, once presented as the voice of workers and the poor, now a veteran manager of Brazilian capitalism. In a moment of candor, Lula remarked in Barcelona that, quote, left-wing governments had implemented austerity upon coming to power. Quote, we have become the system. That much at least was true. While declaiming against inequality in Barcelona, Lula's government continues to approve oil exploitation in the Amazon basin and adapt itself to the demands of capital with all the reliability of a central banker. Earlier this year, in advance of a meeting with Trump that Lula fervently wished for but never happened, he sanctioned the US invasion and coup in Venezuela, declaring of Trump that, quote, we will work together, and that the return of the kidnapped Maduro, quote, is not the main concern. Cyril Ramaphosa was also there. The South African president is not merely a politician, he is one of the richest men in the country, a millionaire representative of the post-apartheid bourgeois order. He was on the board of directors of Lomin when the company carried out the massacre of 34 striking miners in 2012. As president, he oversaw the starving to death of more than 100 Zama Zama miners at the beginning of this year. As anger mounts from below, Ramaphosa is deploying the military under the pretext of combating gang violence. Claudia Sheinbaum also attended, representing a government that speaks in mildly reformist phrases while deploying the Mexican National Guard against workers and migrants at Washington's behest. Earlier this year, Sheinbaum followed commemoration of the US-orchestrated overthrow of Francisco I. Madero in 1913 by inviting the US Navy SEALs to train Mexican special forces. Then there were the various representatives of European imperialism and the long degeneration of social democracy. This included German Vice Chancellor and Social Democratic Party co-leader Lars Klingbeil, whose government is overseeing a massive 1 trillion euro military and infrastructure spending plan aimed at making Germany, quote, fit for war. This, Klingbeil said in February, is the necessary response of Germany to a world where, quote, strength and power are returning as the dominant motives of international politics, end of quote. David Lammy, deputy under UK Prime Minister Sir Keir Starmer, was attending on behalf of the Labour Party, which long ago shed any pretense to social reform. As Justice Secretary last year, Lammy was responsible for stonewalling lawyers and doctors attempting to meet with young people on hunger strike after being arrested for protesting the genocide in Gaza. He was Foreign Secretary when Peter Mandelson, who has ties to sex trafficker Jeffrey Epstein, was appointed ambassador to the US. And so on and so on. This is the political refuse of official Europe. These parties have spent decades liquidating the reforms won by the working class, expanding the powers of the repressive state, backing imperialist war, and then insisting that they still represent the, quote, left. They preside over, or seek to preside over, states arming for war, slashing social spending, and preparing for confrontation with the working class. To describe such a gathering as, quote, progressive, is not merely to deprive the word of meaning, it is to legitimise political fraud. While pitched as response to attacks on democracy, almost all of the main speakers carefully refrained from actually mentioning the name Trump, lest direct reference to the fascist president of the United States might mar the prospect of future business arrangements and trade deals. While making occasional rhetorical criticisms of the war against Iran, all the major parties represented in Barcelona support the US-NATO war against Russia. Exactly 1 month before the summit, on March 18, Sanchez hosted Volodymyr Zelensky at the Moncloa Palace and announced a new 1 billion euro package of military aid to Ukraine for 2026, bringing Spain's cumulative support since 2022 to nearly 3.8 billion euros. The European Social Democrats present, Klingbeil of the German SPD, co-leading a government that has become one of the world's major arms suppliers to Ukraine, Lammy of Britain's Labour government, another principal backer of the war, Löfven associated with Sweden's integration into NATO over this conflict, are not critics of imperialist policy, they are among its political representatives. Of course, we cannot neglect the representatives from the United States. The two American Democrats in attendance, Senator Chris Murphy of Connecticut and Minnesota Governor Tim Walz, performed the function assigned to the Democratic Party. Walz actually spoke the word Trump, calling him a, quote, feeble-minded, trigger-happy president who had launched the Iran war, where no threat was present, with no clear objectives and no exit plan, end of quote. Murphy declared that, quote, Donald Trump is out to end our democracy and that, quote, we are not on the verge of a totalitarian takeover. We are in the middle of it, end of quote. In their mouth, such phrases are empty. If the United States is in the midst of a totalitarian transformation, and here what Murphy said was true, the Democratic Party is not fighting it but adapting itself to it. It votes for war budgets for the military intelligence apparatus, backs the machinery of repression, and blocks any independent political movement of the working class. Hillary Clinton, one of the principal architects of the regime change operations that devastated Libya and Syria, was granted the honour of a video address. The organisers evidently concluded that no conclave of political frauds would be complete without a benediction to one of the high priestesses of imperialist regime change. Nor, for that matter, would such a gathering be complete without the presence of Zoran Mandani. The newly elected mayor of New York City and member of the Democratic Socialist of America delivered a video message that was revealing precisely for its emptiness. Mandani elevated through the familiar pseudo-left process of making social promises while remaining safely within the framework of the Democratic Party, thanked Sanchez for convening the summit, observed that there were many crises and conflicts in the world, noted that rent is high, and called for collective action against inequality. What he did not say was more important. He did not mention Trump. He did not mention Iran. He did not mention Gaza. He did not mention Lebanon. He did not mention the deportation operations being carried out against immigrants in New York. He did not even mention the word war. Mamdani and the DSA exist to absorb racial sentiment, strip it of political clarity, and redirect it into the dead end of Democratic Party politics. In a speech on his 100 days in office a week ago, Mamdani focused his record of achievements on the filling in of potholes in what he called, quote, pothole politics. The phrase deserved to survive if only as an accidental monument to the political bankruptcy it was meant to disguise. The speeches in Barcelona were framed in the language of, quote, democracy, rights, and social justice. The actual business of the governments represented there is conducted in the language of arms contracts, supplies of critical minerals, and trade agreements. On April 19, one day after denouncing the, quote, warlords and tech magnates who supposedly destroy democracy, workers, and nature, Lula flew to Germany to open the Hanover Messe, the world's largest industrial trade fair, where Brazil was this year's official partner country. There, alongside CDU Chancellor Friedrich Merz, Lula celebrated the impending EU-Mercosur trade agreement and broader cooperation in artificial intelligence, critical minerals, and data centres. This is the real content of the multilateralism praised in Barcelona. Not international solidarity against war and austerity, but a strategic and commercial alignment amongst capitalist powers seeking secure access to markets, raw materials and supply chains essential to the digital economy, the arms industry and Europe's accelerating rearmament. The ruling classes of every major country are arming to the teeth. They are cultivating fascist movements as battering rams against the working class. The war against Russia, the genocide in Gaza, the bombardment of Iran and Lebanon are the opening stages of a new imperialist conflagration. And in the face of all this, the assembled progressives in Barcelona produced 15 agreements, a critical minerals deal, a proposed UN panel on inequality, and a reforestation target. The shamelessness of it all was almost breathtaking. Faced with war, dictatorship, and social collapse, they answered with bureaucratic vapour. The pretence of opposition to Trump, stripped of all verbiage, comes down to this, a request that he moderate his rhetoric, consult his allies and observe proper diplomatic etiquette before ordering the next bombing, and prosecute the war against Russia. The task facing the working class is not to pressure these people or to wait upon them. It is to break politically from the parties they represent, from the Democratic Party in the United States, from the PSOE, the PT, the SPD, Labour and their pseudo-left satellites, and to build in every country an independent movement of the working class armed with an international socialist programme. That is the only basis on which fascism, dictatorship and imperialist war can be fought. Nothing in Barcelona pointed in that direction. Everything was designed to prevent it. U.S. seizes Iran-bound ship from China in Arabian Sea. Andre Damon, April 20, 2026. U.S. Marines boarded and seized an Iranian-flagged container ship in the Gulf of Oman on Sunday after the destroyer USS Superance put 5-inch shells through its engine room. It was the first time a U.S. warship had fired on a merchant ship since the blockade of Iran began on February the 28th. The seizure, an act of international piracy, wholly illegal under international law, marks a new escalation of the 52-day-old U.S.-Israeli war on Iran. It comes 2 days before the scheduled expiration of a nominal ceasefire between the United States and Iran. The ship, the MV Tuska, was bound for Bandar Abbas. Over the 6 weeks before the seizure, it had twice docked at Zhuhai in southern China. In a report Monday, the Wall Street Journal identified the Tuska as part of a fleet operated by a subsidiary of the Islamic Republic of Iran Shipping Lines that, quote, often sails to China, one of Tehran's most important backers, end of quote. The Tusker has been under US Treasury sanctions since 2018. The US military has not disclosed its cargo. A search of the 965-foot ship will follow once tugs bring it in. The seizure extends a pattern of US attacks on Russian and Chinese shipping that began with the military campaign against Venezuela. US President Donald Trump ordered a blockade of the Venezuelan oil exports beginning last December 17. This has accompanied a series of missile strikes on small boats in the Caribbean and Pacific that has killed at least 181 people and that Human Rights Watch has called extrajudicial killings. Since December, the US Navy has boarded and seized at least 10 tankers carrying Venezuelan crude. The Russian-flagged Marinera, formerly the Bella One, was seized on January 7th in the North Atlantic south of Iceland, while under Russian Navy escort, including a submarine. Navy SEALs carried out the boarding, ferried by Army Special Operations helicopters and watched over by AC-130 gunships and P-8 surveillance planes. A Chinese-operated tanker, the M. Sophia, was taken in the Caribbean the same month. On February 9, the US Navy captured the tanker Aquila II in the Indian Ocean with 700,000 barrels of Venezuelan crude that were bound for China. Since February 28, the US military has stopped 25 ships off Iran and turned them back. Roughly 230 loaded oil tankers now sit trapped inside the Persian Gulf. Quote, China became the leading buyer, end of quote, of Iranian oil after Washington sanctioned the sector. The Wall Street Journal noted, quote, Beijing doesn't uphold U.S. sanctions, which it calls unilateral and illegal, end of quote. The Russian Foreign Ministry said last week that the United States, quote, sought to take control of Iranian oil in Persian Gulf, end of quote. The two-week ceasefire is set to lapse at midnight Wednesday, April the 22nd. In an interview Monday with Bloomberg News, Trump said it was, quote, highly unlikely he would extend it. The Journal reported Monday afternoon, citing a White House official, that, quote, President Trump is unlikely to extend a ceasefire with Iran that is set to expire on Wednesday evening, end of quote. The New York Times reported from Islamabad that U.S. Vice President J.D. Vance was due to arrive Tuesday for a second round of talks in Pakistan, accompanied by Middle East envoy Steve Witkoff and senior advisor Jared Kushner, but Iranian state media said Tehran would not attend. On Friday, Iranian Foreign Minister Abbas Araghchi posted on X that the Strait of Hormuz was open to commercial shipping on a route hugging the Iranian coast. 19 ships transited the strait on Friday and Saturday morning, the first cargo to move through since the war began 51 days earlier. On Saturday afternoon, Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps gunboats fired on two Indian-flagged ships without the standard radio warnings. That evening, the Revolutionary Guard overruled Araghchi and announced the strait was reclosed. Quote, no vessel should make any movement from its anchorage in the Persian Gulf and the Sea of Oman, the Guard statement read. Approaching the Strait of Hormuz will be considered as cooperation with the enemy, end of quote. India's foreign ministry summoned the Iranian ambassador. On Sunday morning, the USS Spirance stopped the Tusker. Within hours, US President Donald Trump had posted a burst of messages on Truth Social, threatening to destroy the civilian infrastructure on which 90 million Iranians depend. Quote, the United States is going to knock out every single power plant and every single bridge in Iran. No more Mr. Nice Guy. End of quote. On Fox News Sunday, in a pre-taped phone interview with Chief Foreign Correspondent Trey Vingst, Trump said, quote, you're going to see bridges and power plants dropping all over their country of Iran's 90 million people. Quote, if they don't sign the deal, then the whole country is going to get blown up. End of quote. On the ABC News Sunday interview program this week, U.S. Ambassador to the United Nations Michael Waltz defended Trump's threat. Destroying civilian power stations and bridges, he said, is not a war crime. He cited the Allied strategic bombing campaigns in the Second World War as precedent. By Monday's close, US oil futures rose about 7% to $89.61 a barrel. Brent crude settled near $97. The American Automobile Association posted a nationwide average gasoline price of $4.05 a gallon. International Air Transport Association Director General Willie Walsh warned of jet fuel shortages, forcing flight cancellations across Europe by the end of May. Goldman Sachs has modelled a Brent price of $135 in an extended closure of the Strait of Hormuz. Oxford Economics has modelled a peak of $190 a barrel and a world downturn exceeded in the last four decades only by the 2008 crash and the COVID shock. Al Jazeera puts the Iranian dead at 2,076, among them 240 women and 212 children. The Independent Iranian Human Rights Monitor, HRANA, puts the toll at 3,636. The Iranian Red Crescent Society counts 339 damaged hospitals and clinics, 857 schools and 32 universities. The UN Refugee Agency estimates that between 600,000 and 1 million Iranian households, up to 3.2 million people, have been driven from their homes. Iran's government puts the monetary damage at $270 billion. The Lebanese ceasefire signed at midnight April the 17th was broken within 48 hours. UN experts quoted by Al Jazeera describe the Israeli pattern in southern Lebanon as, quote, domicide. Israeli Defense Minister Israel Katz has ordered the demolition of Lebanese houses along a 10-kilometer, quote, yellow line that runs across 55 villages. Residents of those villages have been barred from returning to them. Quote, we have not yet finished the job, Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu said. White House sends delegation to deliver war ultimatum to Cuba. Andrea Lobo, April the 20th, 2026. Following mounting reports, the Pentagon is acting on Trump administration orders to accelerate preparations for military action against Cuba. The White House has dispatched the first high-level U.S. delegation to the island since 2016. While that earlier visit, led by Barack Obama, took place under conditions of a temporary diplomatic reopening, the actions of the latest delegation bear all the hallmarks of an ultimatum preceding aggression. The delegation arrived in Havana on April the 10th aboard a U.S. government aircraft and presented a sweeping set of demands to the Cuban government. These included a two-week deadline to release high-profile political prisoners, implement sweeping market reforms, expand the private sector, and attract foreign investment. The demands, delivered during what U.S. officials described as, quote, a secret meeting, were accompanied by calls for compensation to American corporations and individuals whose assets were nationalized following the 1959 revolution. Washington further insisted on, quote, greater political freedoms, culminating in so-called, quote, free and fair elections, a familiar pretext for regime change operations across the globe. Far from representing genuine diplomacy, these talks recall a pattern employed by U.S. imperialism in the lead-up to military interventions in countries such as Iran and Venezuela. Declare the target government non-compliant and then claim that all peaceful avenues have been exhausted. Axios reported last week that, in preparing a case for war, the Trump administration issued a five-page report to Congress claiming, without any evidence, that Havana has supplied Russia up to 5,000 combatants for the war in Ukraine. Senior State Department official Michael Kozak confirmed that the United States is pressing for, quote, drastic reforms in Cuba. According to multiple reports, U.S. officials even floated the introduction of SpaceX's Starlink satellite internet system, a proposal framed as expanding connectivity, but which would in practice deepen U.S. technological and political penetration of the island. According to Axios, U.S. officials warned that Cuba's leadership has only a, quote, small window to enact U.S.-backed reforms before conditions irreversibly worsen. Cuban officials have acknowledged the meeting. Alejandro Garcia del Toro, a senior foreign ministry official, stated that, quote, assistant secretaries of the State Department participated in the U.S. side while Cuba was represented at the vice ministerial level. active military preparations are already underway. According to reports by CyberCuba, the US Navy has flown at least two surveillance missions using the high-altitude MQ-4C Triton drone in less than a week. The aircraft was detected circling the island on April 17 and again on Monday based on publicly available tracking data. These reconnaissance flights are widely understood as precursors to potential military action. Trump himself has repeatedly declared that Cuba is, quote, next, following U.S. operations targeting Iran, as his administration announces a Greater North America doctrine to reassert dominance over the hemisphere. The internal situation in Cuba, meanwhile, is marked by both concessions to imperialist pressure and growing fears of imminent attack. Cuban Deputy Prime Minister Oscar Perez Oliva Fraga recently declared that, quote, there are no limitations on investment from the Cuban diaspora, explicitly appealing to Cuban exile capitalists in Miami, many of whom have historically backed terrorist attacks and coup attempts against the island. This appeal underscores the extent to which the Cuban government is seeking an accommodation with U.S. capital. Havana has repeatedly signaled its willingness to implement an unrestricted opening to foreign investment and allow U.S. officials to directly oversee the process, effectively offering to oversee a U.S.-dominated export-oriented economy. The Castro-White government also freed over 2,000 prisoners in the largest release in a decade and even invited the FBI to the island to investigate the incident in February where heavily armed Cuban-American terrorists on a U.S.-flagged speedboat were killed by Cuban security forces. The desperation of sections of the Cuban elite was revealed in an extraordinary episode following the April 10 meeting. Raul Guillermo Rodriguez Castro reportedly attempted to bypass official channels by sending a private letter to the White House via a businessman courier, Roberto Carlos Chamizo Gonzalez. The courier was intercepted in Miami and sent back to Cuba, as first reported by the Wall Street Journal. The attempted back-channel communication reveals a frantic effort to avert an attack through concessions, efforts that history shows will only embolden imperialist aggression. On April 17, the anniversary of the 1961 Bay of Pigs invasion, Cuban President Miguel Díaz-Canel delivered a speech placing the country on maximum alert. Quote, "The moment is extremely challenging and calls upon us once again to be ready to face serious threats, including military aggression," end of quote. Workers must carefully study the fate of Venezuela following military aggression. A January 3 military operation led to the kidnapping of President Nicolas Maduro and his wife, Cilia Flores, who now face terrorism charges in a U.S. court. In the aftermath, a puppet regime aligned with U.S. interests was installed, handing over control of oil, minerals, and the broader economy to American corporations and the U.S. Treasury. However bad the economic situation was in Venezuela, it has only grown worse for workers, who have protested against the government and U.S. embassy demanding living wages. Cuba would meet a similar fate under a pro-U.S. regime, which would seek to attract investments on the basis of maintaining desperate conditions to coerce workers to accept extremely low wages and sweatshop conditions. Cuba is facing an acute fuel shortage after oil shipments from Venezuela, its primary supplier, for decades were halted in January following U.S. actions against that country. Trump subsequently imposed a full oil blockade, threatening punitive tariffs on any nation that supplies fuel to Cuba. The consequences have been catastrophic. Blackouts lasting up to 20 hours have become routine, crippling infrastructure and daily life. Water systems dependent on electric pumps have failed in many urban areas. Garbage collection has collapsed and hospitals are struggling to function as medical equipment fails and supplies dwindle. A single Russian tanker carrying approximately 730,000 barrels of oil was allowed through the blockade in late March, providing only temporary relief. A second Russian tanker is en route to Cuba and could arrive, if allowed by the U.S. Coast Guard, as early as April 29. The United Nations has warned that the blockade could trigger a, quote, severe humanitarian crisis, affecting every aspect of the food system, from irrigation and harvesting to refrigeration and distribution. Having already imposed devastating sanctions and blockades, Washington now insists that Cuba open itself fully to foreign capital. effectively demanding surrender in exchange for the possibility of relief. The alternative posed by US imperialism is not democracy or prosperity, but the restoration of neo-colonial order reminiscent of the dictatorship of Fulgencio Baptista, under which Cuba functioned as a playground for foreign capital and organized crime. The escalating threat of war against Cuba must be opposed by workers throughout the Americas and internationally. Workers in the United States in particular bear a decisive responsibility. Through their collective power over production and distribution, they have the capacity to break the embargo and halt the machinery of war. This requires an independent political mobilization as part of a broader struggle against capitalism and for socialist internationalism. For these articles and more, go to the World Socialist website, wsws.org. For the World Socialist website, this has been Carol Diviak.
The World Socialist website is published by the International Committee of the Fourth International, the ICFI, the leadership of the World Socialist Movement, the Fourth International founded by Leon Trotsky in 1938. The World Socialist website relies entirely on the donations of readers and listeners for financial support. To give to the WSWS or to set up a regular monthly contribution, go to wsws.org/donate. We urge our listeners to join the International Committee of the Fourth International and one of its affiliated political parties and take up the struggle for socialism.